This is a CBC podcast.
Hi there, it's Pia, and every Wednesday, we're bringing you a bonus podcast, one handpicked story from the week's round of the Sunday magazine that we think is definitely worth hearing or hearing again. Of course, you can hear all of our stories on the full podcast that we put out on Sunday and on the CBC Listen app. All right, here's this week's highlight. Nazem Kadri recalls his childhood days in his favorite place doing his favorite thing. His favorite place, Victoria Park in London, Ontario. His favorite thing, skating with his dad, Samir. Samir was convinced his little boy would one day graduate to the big hockey league. And boy, oh boy, was he ever right. Nazem not only made it to the NHL, he also became the first player who is Muslim to win the Stanley Cup. From his NHL start with the Toronto Maple Leafs and his championship run with the Colorado Avalanche to now playing center for the Calgary Flames, Nazem's identity, his staunch confidence, and yes, his scuffles have defined him on and off the ice. Nazem is telling his life story in a memoir. It's called Dreamer, My Life on the Edge. Nazem Kadri, hi, happy birthday.
Yeah, thanks guys. Thank you for having me.
Let's go back to London, Ontario some 30 years ago. What was it about hockey that hooked you as a little guy?
I feel like my initial, love of the game probably came from outside, and just, that's kind of what attracted me, and, being with friends and, skating on ice and grabbing a cup of hot chocolate after. And those were probably my fondest memories and, ones I'll certainly never forget.
Yeah. Parents, stand by their kids. They support them. That's what they do. And lots of parents are like, yeah, my kid's good at whatever the thing is that they're doing. Maybe they'll make it to the big leagues one day. Maybe they won't. But your dad, Samir Nazem, the way you tell it, your dad was like, 100%, my kid's going to the NHL. I know that. And you write a lot about your dad and your grandfather, both of whom immigrated to Canada from Lebanon, in shaping who you are. Tell me about your dad and your grandfather. How did they influence you in those early days?
Certainly my dad was, he's an ambitious guy and, is certainly dedicated to anything he does. So, he first introduced me to the game and taught me, how to skate and how to shoot and how to play. And my grandfather didn't really know much about it, but he was more of a working class, blue collared guy, just always had an immense amount of work ethic to provide for his family. And my father, on the other hand, was the big hockey fan. But, it's interesting because, I don't have really any historical background when it comes to anybody playing the game of hockey. In fact, like zero. So I was pretty much the only person that had played organized hockey throughout my family and, was lucky enough to pave a nice path to professional hockey.
Mm-hmm. And as you say, he never laced up a pair of skates. He never held a stick in your hand. And yet you say, look, when I was a kid, the person that was teaching me how to play hockey was my pa.
Well, yeah, which is pretty remarkable. I mean, sometimes I ask myself the same question. And, he certainly does impress me at times with how much he knows about the game for having, no really experience playing the game. He's certainly an impressive person. And, I guess it rubbed off on me a little.
The other thing is that your family, you, your sisters, your mom, your big Lebanese-Canadian family used to go watch you play hockey from a very young age. No matter where you were, there were the Kadris in the stands having their own cheering section over there. And I bring that up because you have a very supportive family and they supported you through the good things and the bad things. And I want to talk about some of the challenges, especially when you're a kid. You're a brown kid playing hockey from an immigrant family. And when you're about 10, you began to face some of the things that I think your father, your grandfather had faced in their own ways. But you got it from the stands where you experienced racism on the ice. What do you remember about those incidents and what your family told you to do when those kinds of things happen?
It was awkward, to say the least, for sure. It kind of made me feel obviously very uncomfortable. I just, at a young age, you can't really put two and two together when things like that happen. But some vulgar, you know, disgusting behavior from grownups, and as a matter of fact, which is, you know, makes it a whole lot worse. But, you know, as a kid, I just tried to continue to work. And I always was the type of person to, you know, want to prove doubters wrong. And, you know, luckily for me, I think I had a very supportive family. They, you know, were able to help me navigate it.
And so, Nazem, when you look back on it now as a grown adult, how did those experiences inform how you approached, I mean, just walking in this world and in your sport as a Canadian, but as a Canadian who is a brown Muslim man?
It has its challenges, especially when it's, you know, happens more times than you'd want it to. As a young kid, you feel insecure about it. You feel lots of doubt. You know, it's hard to overcome at first. And that's when you need your family to lean on. And thankfully, I had that. But, you know, after that initial feeling and you learn how to deal with it, I think it, you know, there becomes a little bit of a hatred there and a little bit of a chip on your shoulder. And it kind of fuels the fire a little bit. And, you know, that's kind of where your kind of ruthless mindset kicks in and you do anything to survive.
So through all this, you're playing hockey, you know, playing in the OHL, you're playing for the London Knights, for Kitchener, you're playing in the juniors. And then in 2009, you did exactly what your father knew you would do. You get drafted by the Leafs. He didn't think it would be the Leafs or didn't want it to be the Leafs as a Habs fan, but you make the NHL. And it takes you a couple of years to find your footing. And when you walk into the NHL, Nazem, you express like a huge amount of confidence. Where does that come from for you?
Probably my dad. I mean, he's a pretty confident individual himself. You know what? One thing he always told me was that had stuck with me. You know, if you don't believe in yourself, you know, how can you expect anybody else to? So I think that was a slogan that kind of stuck with me for a long time. And in professional sports, there's a lot of time to doubt yourself and have a real negative mindset. But at the end of the day, it can be easier said than done, but you know, you need that confidence and to go anywhere.
Your air of confidence was well-earned. Your goal scoring rose. You became an integral part of the team, but some critics have called it cockiness. And you write in your book, quote, "When I came into the league, my confidence was viewed as a character flaw, but I knew it was one of my most valuable weapons." So where do you see the line between those two things, confidence and cockiness?
Well, there certainly is a balance. You know, as just a younger person, you feel more invincible than you should. You know, and as you kind of mature, you start to understand how to deal with that. I think I came into the NHL at a bit of a transition phase where, you know, you kind of had to prove your worth, which I was okay with, but you had to do it in a quiet fashion. You had to have like a quiet confidence and not ruffle anybody's feathers. So I took a bit of a different approach, and it may have rubbed some people the wrong way, but you know, in the end, once they got to know me, they understood, you know, I was a guy they'd want to have on their team.
And do you think part of that was, I don't know, like a different approach, kind of challenging the culture, the character of the game?
I think so, because, you know, hockey is very traditional. And, you know, I think the sport needed, you know, some personality and some confidence and some swagger. And obviously, you know, I'm not by all means saying I did every single thing correctly, because I certainly made a lot of mistakes on the way. But it's a traditional game, and everybody expects you to, I mean, at least back then, they'd expect you to kind of fall in line and be quiet about it. But I believed in myself, and it took a little while for everyone else to believe in me as well.
Let's talk about some of those mistakes. With the Leafs, you racked up a string of suspensions for illegal cross checks and elbow to the head. There's others. You're fined $200,000 as a repeat offender. Then you get traded to the Colorado Avalanche in 2019. And then during the playoff run in 2021, you get suspended 8 games for an illegal hit to the head against defenseman Justin Falk from the St. Louis Blues. Colorado is eliminated before you could get back on the ice. So you just said, you know, I made my share of mistakes. Looking back, do you have any regrets about your on-ice conduct?
Of course, I wish I was on the ice and playing and instead of in the press box watching. But none of those things were meant to be malicious. In fact, a lot of times, you know, I was standing up for teammates and trying to rally with my teammates. And, you know, I did it in the wrong way. That is a regret of mine. Obviously, things on the ice, you know, a lot of people don't understand that don't play happen in the bat of an eyelash. You know, you make some decisions that you're not sure about, but in the moment, it kind of just goes down the way it goes down because things happen so, so incredibly fast. Of course, all those suspensions and all those mistakes I made, I completely regret. But at the end of the day, fighting that adversity made me who I am today.
You know, you talk about things happening in a bat of an eyelash and sitting in the stands or the press box for that matter. People can make a lot of assumptions, what they think they saw or what the motivation was for something happening. And that happened to you, right? Like people thought someone had said something to you and you don't shake the guy's hand and it was about something else. And you say, listen, it wasn't about that.
Couch coaching, I call it. Everybody thinks they're the head coach when they're sitting on their sofas watching the game. But for me, there was tons of speculation and you know, people just thought they knew exactly what was going on. In fact, when they didn't. So, you know, that was very frustrating for me, just having to, you know, I would try to shrug it off, but obviously it was just, you know, an immense amount of pressure for me to come back and perform and you know, the things people were saying about me. And, you know, I just felt an urge to just continue that ambitious feel and prove these people wrong.
Yeah, let's talk about a specific incident that happens when Colorado makes the playoffs again. Things get complicated, I think, is perhaps maybe not the right words, but I'll put it as complicated. Game 3 of the second round against the Blues, you're involved in a collision with goalie Jordan Binnington. He gets a lower body injury, sits out the rest of the series. You said all along, it's an accident. Then you get the target of racist and Islamophobic attacks online. They're never nice. Some were particularly harsh and awful, profane and violent. Things even were referred to the police. And Nazem Kadri, you say this completely changed your mindset. How so?
Yeah, I mean, that was certainly a delicate topic and, you know, over something that I had zero control of. In sports, things happen quickly and you just have to react as it is. So, you know, for me, that was the worst messages and, you know, in terms of the hate and the racism. I mean, I think that got to its peak at that point, you know, when I started to worry not only for myself and my own safety, but for my family's as well. So, you know, that's a tough predicament to be in when you have to, you know, perform at an NHL stage in the playoffs and worry about your family's safety at the same time. So, but for me, that really was a turning point in my career where, you know, I was able to put one foot in front of the other and just silence everybody, which was a nice feeling to have.
Mm-hmm. And how'd you do that? And what I mean by that is, like, it doesn't matter if you're an NHL player or a kid on a playground, like, that stuff hurts. It's maddening and saddening and scary. So how were you as a person, as I'm able to just be like one foot in front of another?
Yeah, I mean, just conversations with my family and, you know, with myself. Honestly, it's when you're reading the type of stuff I had to read that people were saying about you, you know, that was just basically faith related and appearance related. You know, it kind of wore on me for a little bit, you know, and I'm not a person to really feel an immense amount of doubt all the time. I usually can battle through that pretty easily. But, you know, this was different. This was very hard for me. You know, I remember when it happened, I just, you know, I was down on myself for that entire night. I had a half decent sleep and woke up in the morning with just an absolute revengeful mindset where everybody was going to get it, you know, that next day on the ice. So, you know, it was hard for me to go through, but like I said, these are the type of situations that have, you know, have turned me into who I've become.
You also had a young baby at the time.
I did.
So that must, like, when you looked at her, thought about what you were going through, I imagine that had some effect too.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, when you think about your family, that comes before hockey. you know, one of the things that hurt me the most was potentially worrying about their safety. And, you know, because I had been on the road at the time, so I wasn't at home. You know, I couldn't protect them in any way, shape, or form. So that was very difficult to deal with. But at the end of the day, you know, I had a job to do, and boy, did I do it.
That's one way of putting it. Some redemption, your team, for those who don't remember or don't know, Colorado makes it to the finals. Game four goes into overtime, and then this happened.
Kadri back in action, denied by Vasilevsky. Oh, what a play!
It's in.
And it's in, or is it? Where is it? Does Vasilevsky have it?
No, it's in. It's in the back of the net.
And yes, it is a Nazem Kadri game-winning goal. And the Colorado Avalanche are on the cusp of the cup.
There you have it, right? Score the winning goal during overtime in game four. Doesn't get much better than that. You go on with your team to win the Stanley Cup after six games. So take me there, Nazem, especially given what you just said. Look, I was ready to get on that ice and just give it all there, but I'm worried about my family. What did that victory mean to you? Obviously, as a hockey player, but even beyond just winning the Stanley Cup, which in itself is awesome, I imagine.
Just listening to that clip in the final, scoring against Tampa Bay in a Stanley Cup final overtime game, was something you just dream about. And, you know, it gives me goosebumps always hearing those clips, because, you know, it was a bit of a controversial goal and just how it kind of tucked in to the back of the net and just kind of stayed there was very surreal. And not to mention, I'd had surgery 2 weeks before that. That was my first game returning. Basically did that with one broken hand. So the stars aligned that year, and just, I had such an incredible group of teammates and support staff that I could have, you know, never done any of that without.
It was such a symbolic win, Nazem. I think for so many Canadians to see you, a Muslim Canadian, the first Muslim player to win the Stanley Cup, they saw a little bit of themselves in you. What was that like for you to know that they were seeing that?
Incredibly inspiring. And, you know, I think you don't really realize, you know, how much support and how much following you have in real time. I think afterwards, reflecting on it, you know, you start to realize people look up to you. And you know, for me, I'm certainly far from perfect, but, you know, I try to be the best, you know, role model as possible, and try to give kids some hope. And, you know, because hockey is such a great sport. It is such a great game, and you meet so many great people, and just the camaraderie of it is just, you know, I can't speak enough about. So, you know, for me, it's an absolute privilege to just even be given that position and try to lead the way.
Yeah. I remember, I think it was the following summer, that the Stanley Cup goes back to London, Ontario, and into the mosque there. The first time the Stanley Cup has ever been inside a Muslim house of worship. That must have been quite something.
It definitely was. That's one way to put it, for sure. For me, I think, anytime you can become the first person in history to accomplish something, I'm extremely proud of that. And, you know, like I said, it's, you know, opening the eyes up of the next generation. And, you know, this sport is going to be here. It was here long before me, and it's going to be here long after me. So I just try to, lead by example and hopefully, you know, inspire some kids to, you know, follow in my footsteps.
We started out talking about your dad, Samir. And I want to end our conversation talking about him as well, because you tell this great story about him rushing down the highway in his car one night when a song comes on the radio. You want to tell us that story?
That's actually a fantastic story. Yes, so my mom was giving birth to me, and my father was on his way to the hospital. He's rushing to the hospital, and right before he pulls in, The Big Leagues by Tom Cochran comes on the radio, and it says, my boy's going to play in the big leagues. And sure enough, that's kind of what happened. And ironically enough, I've actually become friends with Tom Cochran. I've told him that story a bunch, and he absolutely loves it. So it's really a full circle moment, and an incredible story that you know, my dad definitely loves to tell.
I was going to say, he must run around telling this story. I knew that my boy was going to make it. He must be pretty darn proud of you.
Yeah, he's definitely a proud dad when he gets the opportunity to play that story. But you know what? It's certainly a story worth telling. So it's a good one.
It's been nice to read about your life story, both on and off the ice, Nazem. And I appreciate you joining me. Thank you.
Okay, anytime. Thank you.
Nazem Kadri's new memoir is called Dreamer, My Life on the Edge. You can find all the stories we bring you each week on the Sunday Magazine over on our website, cbc.ca/Sunday. I'm Pia Chattopadhyay. Thank you for lending us your ear, and we'll talk to you again on Sunday.
For more CBC podcasts, go to cbc.ca/podcasts.